It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Wow, good morning, and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, June 27th. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship going on today. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Well, so glad you can join me where I am every Sunday morning through Labor Day weekend to talk golf with you. Lots going on as usual, so let's begin. Well, I did spend the last several days up at the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, Connecticut, at the TPC River Highlands course, and there are always compelling storylines up there. And, you know, personally for me, I had a great time walking with a young man whom I played with at the BMW Charity Pro-Am a few weeks ago, Austin Eckroat. You heard me talking about Austin last week, and when I played with Austin in the Korn Ferry Tour event, it was his very first professional tournament. He was coming off the Walker Cup win as part of that U.S. team, and he turned pro shortly after that. He's an Oklahoma State four-time All-American. It's been a lot of fun getting to know Austin, his dad, his fiance. And this weekend, he is playing in the Travelers Championship, his very first tournament PGA Tour event as a professional. And, you know, Travelers is really great at extending special exemptions to young, talented players. Talked to Andy Bassett about that a couple weeks ago. And Austin was one of the guys who received a special exemption. So I walked all 18 holes watching him on Friday, and he made the cut. He made the cut on the cut line at 2-under. He shot a 4-under 66 on Friday, and then walked with him yesterday, and he shot a 1-under 69. So I enjoy getting to know these young guys. And yesterday, Matthew Wolf, who missed the cut at the Travelers, he walked with Austin, and it was great to talk to Matthew a bit while we were following Austin's progress. So I was pulling for Matthew Wolf at the U.S. Open. He was one shot off the lead going into the final weekend, and gosh, the kid has so much talent. He came in second place in his first U.S. Open, which was at Wingfoot in 2020, and it was great to watch him play there. And, you know, for many of these players, especially the younger ones, it takes time to learn how to deal with the ups and downs of the tour, of all the attention, of the pressure, because no matter how good you are, everyone faces highs and lows, and it takes experience to learn how to deal with the highs and the lows. You know, with the pressures of playing, of fame, of all the expectation out there, and mostly all the expectation you put on yourself. I mentor, you know, a lot of young people, and no matter what field you're in, whether you're an athlete, a broadcaster, a business person, no matter, you know, how high up you are, we all deal with major disappointment, and we all fail. I don't even like to use the word failure. I don't look at it like that. I look at it as perhaps we're not living up to our own expectations, but that's a chance for us to learn and to grow. So we're not going to win all the time. But, you know, as long as we can do the best we can, that's really all we can do. And so just do the best you can and enjoy the ride, right? That's all we can do. Anyway, I interviewed Austin Eckroat for this show, talking about, you know, the Travelers being his first PGA Tour event as a professional, and much, much more. We get into a lot of stuff. So you'll hear that conversation this morning. And heading into today's final round at the Travelers, you can catch early TV coverage on the Golf Channel from 1 to 3, and then you can catch TV coverage of the tournament on CBS from 3 to 6. And they also have coverage on CBS Sportscom and CBS Sports app, and there's so many ways to watch what's going on at the Travelers Championship. And what's going on is there is a two-way tie for the lead at 10-under. Kramer Hickok looking for his first career tour victory in his 68th start. He's tied for the lead with Bubba Watson. Bubba has won the Travelers Championship three times. Bubba just loves that course. feels very comfortable. And so Bubba looking to join Billy Casper as a four-time winner at the Travelers Championship. So both Hickok and Bubba, they shot 68s yesterday. Jason Day is one shot back looking for his 13th title and his first since 2018. Dealing with some back issues, it looks like, though. And Dustin Johnson, he fired the low round of the day, a 5-under 65 yesterday. At 7-under, he's three shots back, tied for 9th place right now. And then you had some excitement with a few aces out there. Abraham Anser and Kyle Stanley. They aced the par 3 8th hole from about 180 yards out with a 7-iron. That was fun to see. And then Phil Mickelson, he shot a plus 2 yesterday and just thrilled the fans on the 18th when he drained a long bomb to finish up with a birdie. He's at even par. So Phil is 10 shots back. But, you know, it was great to see Phil make the cut and play the weekend. There are 36 players within 5 shots of the lead. So it's going to be a wild finish. Who can predict what will happen? The KPMG Women's PJ Championship is going on as well. That's at the Atlanta Athletic Club. And Lizette Salas and Nellie Korda are tied for the lead at 15 under, 5 strokes ahead of the pack. Korda shot a record-tying 63 in the second round, finishing with 6 straight birdies. And then yesterday, Korda carded a bogey-free 68. She's playing lights out. And Salas she's shot 5 under each day. So they lead Patty Tabatanikit, Julia Molinaro, and Celine Boutier by 5 shots heading into today's final round with that one. And you can watch that final round from 3 to 6 on NBC. And earlier, from noon to 3 on Peacock. All right, one of the big announcements coming out of that major this week was that KPMG announced that they will be providing a statistical program, which is like full-field shot-level data, advanced analytics, for the LPGA players with the same performance stats and data that the guys get on the PGA Tour via ShotLink. And financial limitations have prevented the LPGA from collecting all this data that the guys get. Until now, KPMG is going to handle it, which is huge because, you know, they'll be able to generate data including strokes gained putting, strokes gained off the tee, proximity averages, and just a variety of other stats that will give players and coaches tremendous insight on where they stack up against the rest of the players out there from all kinds of distances. So this would be huge for the players and for the coaches and beneficial also to fans and to the media. I'm sure the TV commentators will make use of the information. So again, it's great to see more progress being made in the women's game for sure. And this past Tuesday, I had the opportunity to play Baltusrol Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey. And I've played this historic course several times, but this time it was after renowned golf course architect Gil Hance and his team recently completed a redesign of the lower course to bring it back to A.W. Tillinghast's original design. And so this morning you'll hear from Gil Hance, and I tell you, if you're a golf design architecture buff, if you love history, I think you'll enjoy hearing what Gil has to say about his process of restoring golf courses and what specifically he did at Baltusrol to accomplish that, basically restoring Tillinghast's legacy. And, you know, walking through that incredible clubhouse, much of it was redone after a fire destroyed portions of it. But taking a tour of the inside of the clubhouse was just fascinating, with all the memorabilia and the various rooms paying homage to Baltusrol's rich history, the scoring room with scorecards from many of the major championships that were held there through the years, and the original design plans. You have an interactive media screen in the men's locker room. You have the Tillinghast room. I mean, it's just it's like a museum. I just love that. And, you know, I've covered many a major championship there. I've covered the 2016 PGA Championship, which Jimmy Walker won. I was there when Phil won the 2005 PGA Championship. Even in 93, when Lee Jansen won the U.S. Open. And all in all, they've hosted 15 USGA sponsored championships, 2 PGA championships. So it was a great day. And I had the pleasure of playing with members Mary Lou Carter and John Kimble, who are so proud of the club and its history and restoration. And Mary Lou Carter is the chairperson of the KPMG Women's PGA, which Baltusrol will host in 2023. So that's a big job, and it was fun to play with her and get to know her a bit. And I also played at Donald Ross Gym, about 25 minutes away from Baltusrol, Mountain Ridge Country Club in West Caldwell. The club president, Bob Brenner, hosted our foursome, and what a gorgeous course and clubhouse that is, and a great view from the clubhouse. Beautiful, just a very challenging course. And that club will be hosting the LPGA's Founders Cup the week of October 4th, featuring the top women playing and honoring the founders and pioneers of the LPGA. You know, I'm convinced that we have more incredible golf courses in this New York metropolitan area than anywhere in the country. We really do. We're just blessed with so many great golf courses. And I mean, I love the courses in Ireland, but in this area, just so many just amazing golf courses. So, all right, coming up, a conversation with renowned golf course architect Gil Hance on the renovation he and his team recently completed at historic Baltusrol Golf Club. But first, let me tell you that Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship with the final round this afternoon. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori, and my guest is renowned golf architect Gil Hance. Gil is known for his tremendous work restoring classic courses, including reworking Donald Ross's Oakland Hills in Michigan, Perry Maxwell's Southern Hills in Oklahoma, Donald Ross's Arana Mink in Pennsylvania, number 4 at Pinehurst, which I love, and my favorite course at Pinehurst, Seth Rayner's Fisher's Island, which is my top course of all time off of the east end of Long Island, and most recently, the famed A.W. Tillinghast design, Baltusrol, in Springfield, New Jersey. Welcome to Talking Golf, Gil.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me on.
Boy, that is just an amazing body of work, and I could go on and on and on. You designed the Rio 2016 Olympic golf course, Stream Song Black, Castle Stewart in Scotland. But let's focus on Baltusrol, because it was a joy to play Baltusrol, the lower course, in the media unveiling recently. And, you know, I've always loved playing Baltusrol, but to play it after you and your team restored the course with the goal of restoring the legacy of Tillinghast was a real treat.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we it was great to be out there. I hadn't seen it since December, and Greg Boring and his team, Greg's the superintendent there, had done a phenomenal job getting it prepared and ready, and I think the members are truly excited about the work that was done. And you know, at the end of the day, our goal always is to restore and enhance the legacy of the original architect, and in that case, it was, you know, one of the greatest of all time in A.W. Tillinghast.
That's just incredible, all these restorations and, you know, to really go through that process. Can you talk about the process? I mean, I would think that so much time and effort goes into researching what Tillinghast originally did with the design.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it ultimately comes down to the archival material that the clubs have, and we've been tremendously fortunate to work at places like Wingfoot and Sleepy Hollow and Quaker Ridge and Baltusrol, from the standpoint of they've got such great championship history. And we could go back at Wingfoot and look at the 1929 U.S. Open program and the golf course that Bobby Jones won on. And, you know, Baltusrol hosted multiple major championships when, you know, the original Tillinghast design before it had been changed by Robert Trent Jones. So the fact that we could get this material, utilize it to the best of our ability, and ultimately, in our opinion, the key thing is to figure out what Tillinghast did at Baltusrol. You know, what Tillinghast feeling, as did it at Wingfoot or Ridgewood or Fenway or Quaker Ridge, is great background information for us. But the reality is it's not totally applicable to Baltus rolls. So we needed to do a deep dive on the lower course in this iteration and figure out what he did there. And we were truly thankful that the club had such great information for us. And then at the end of the day, it comes down to getting the details right in the field. And, you know, the team that we assembled out there, I think we nailed it.
Oh, absolutely. And I know the members are just ecstatic. And it was so great to see their passion, too, not only for your work, but, you know, for just the history of the club. Baltus Roll has really shaped the story of American golf. I was watching the video that Jim Nantz narrated, and, you know, it was so great to hear him in that voice. You know, 125 years into its story, Baltus Roll begins a new chapter, and the enthusiasm for the restoration was really something to experience.
Well, a lot of these clubs that have a great legacy and great tradition, you know, over a period of time, and it was generally in the 50s and the 60s, you know, they drifted away from that. And there was this goal of modernization in golf course architecture. You know, the equipment was changing, which is not different from what we're talking a lot about today. But there was a feeling of really not a great deal of reverence for the work of the Tillinghasts and the Rosses and the Rainers, because, you know, Robert Trent Jones knew those guys. I mean, they weren't deities to him. They were competitors. And so I think, you know, that goal of modernizing golf courses and not really having the appropriate respect for the original design, the implementation, the introduction of trees. You know, once Augusta National started showing up on television and Pine Valley was ranked as the best golf course in the country, everyone started to think, oh, well, they're tree-lined golf courses, so we have to go in that direction. And I think, you know, we're so excited to be involved in this renaissance of reclaiming and restoring these great old golf courses in keeping and in line with their original designers.
So what was done specifically, if you can name some examples, of bringing, you know, Baltus Roll back to Tillinghast's original design?
So a lot of the work focused on the green complexes, trying to get the greens back to being the high point or the focal point, which all the photographs of the golf course showed that the greens themselves were the high point, and the bunkers sat down in the ground around them. So we tried to reestablish that connection between those features. We expanded the greens back out to their original scale, and so now the greens are right up against the bunkers versus, you know, 3 or 4 yards of rough in between green and bunker. And by restoring the scale of them, we recaptured some hole locations that have been lost over time, but we also recaptured some of the great slopes. You know, we saw them at Wingfoot, and the players were utilizing those to feed balls off of them to get at hole locations, and Baltus Roll had some of those, but just through the evolution and period of time. And it's not as if anybody had this great plan to take that away. It's just, you know, think about if you miss mowing by an inch over 70 or 80 years, you know, now all of a sudden that's 10 feet. And so you start to lose these things just incrementally. And so we were just, you know, excited that the club was willing and interested to restore and reclaim all these areas. And we think, you know, I was playing with the club president, and he was talking about, I've never seen that whole location. We've never had the flag there. And so that in my mind is pretty exciting, because that's recapturing a lot of the flavor that Tillinghast had.
And when you were digging, did you actually find proof of some of Tillinghast's original layout?
We did. It's a bit of an archaeological, you know, we're always excited when they cover over bunkers, if they don't do a really good job of covering them over, then when we go and dig, we can find where the sand was, because they leave, you know, several inches of sand down there, and we chase those contours, and we really try to restore. So the combination of looking at old aerial photographs and then what we can find actually in the ground gives us a certain, you know, a sense of certainty that we're on the right track and that we've got the scales and the proportions. And speaking of that, you know, the reclamation of the Sahara bunker on the 17th hole and getting the scale and the presentation of that back to the more rugged, rustic, a bunch of different islands and different levels in that Sahara bunker. That
is spectacular, by the way.
Well, thank you. Well, it was, you know, just again paying attention to the details, and Ben Hillard, one of our shapers, spent a lot of time in there knocking rocks into place. It was a pretty rocky bit of an area to work on. As we get closer to the upper course, I think that was just a harbinger of what's to come up there.
So the Sahara bunker on 17, was it, did you enlarge the space to bring it back to Tillinghast's original, or what was exactly done to it to get it back to the original?
We did, and you know, and here I am talking about original, but we actually wound up moving it downrange to get it so that the location of it was more relevant to the way the game is played now, you know, where it was in its original location and the evolution that had occurred to it. It had really sort of fallen out of position. You know, so people, longer hitters, were driving into it as opposed to it being this fearsome hazard for the second shot. And, you know, it really places the emphasis on getting it in the fairway with your first shot, and then you can think about getting over it. So we shifted it downrange 40 yards into a landform that we felt was compatible with the original scale, and then we just looked at that old photograph and recreated the size of it, and you know, even the number of islands that were originally in it are, you know, every single one of them is accounted for now.
So how do you know through when you're going through the process of the redesign, how do you know when you got it right? Yeah, or do you ever?
Well, you know, the members will tell us, that's for sure.
Right.
But I think it's one of those things where you just, you feel, you do all the research, as you mentioned earlier, and then we just look at it in the context of, okay, the aerial photograph shows it to be this dimension, and then the photographs from on the ground show a person standing in this hazard to look at about this dimension. So you're trying to do everything you can to verify, but at the end of the day, a lot of it is just going to be, you know, your feel and your gut feeling and your instincts for what ultimately mm-hmm. makes the most sense.
Interesting, yeah. And you just feel it. You know, you've done enough of these to know if you got it right or you still need, you know, or if there's still more work to be done. And what about what was done to improve the agronomic infrastructure? I know, you know, it was raining when we played, unfortunately, but it dried very quickly. And I heard, you know, something going on underground.
Yeah, so the... You know, there's been so many advances in technology and in drainage and irrigation. So through the green, through under the fairways and under the bunkers, you know, the liner systems in order to help improve the basically the drainage. I mean, at the end of the day, your ability to move water off of the golf course on the surface and then to move it under the ground will ultimately yield the best playable conditions. And then taking that to the, you know, the top line of current technology underneath the greens, we have the ability, you know, through a precision air system to pull moisture out, so, and then to blow air back in, but not only to help dry the roots and to create air movement under there, but also we can heat and cool that air. So from the standpoint, it's like, you know, radiant heating in the floor. You can warm up the soil temperatures, which will ultimately, you know, get the golf course open sooner. You can cool the soil temperatures, which will, in the summertime, when you've got all the stress of heat and a little bit of moisture, et cetera, help the plant thrive and survive. And the best superintendents, you know, love a sense of predictability and a sense of consistency. And if they can, you know, predict with a high degree of success that once it rains this amount, it's going to take this long to dry off the golf course, or if we get these types of temperatures, we can cool the grass down. And then as a result, the governing bodies, you know, the Masters, the PGA of America, the USGA, you know, in this country, they love to go to venues where they know that they can have a certain degree of control over the conditions. Because
sure.
At the end of the day, it's that setup that ultimately is the biggest challenge for the best players in the world. And if you can have a high degree of confidence that you can, as much as possible, you can never totally manipulate what Mother Nature throws at you, but if you can take her best punch and get back in play quickly and have the conditions be firm and fast, then that's a major attraction for the governing bodies to come to a course.
And, of course, Baltusrol has already hosted, 17 major championships, including 7 U.S. Opens and 2 PGA championships, and just touring the clubhouse that was recently, you know, redone, part of it. I know there was a fire recently, which was just crazy. But that Baltusrol clubhouse is like a museum, so much memorabilia and history preserved. It's just really a very special place.
It is, and the members there understand it. They have a great degree of pride, but the thing I love the most about the Baltusrol membership is they're excited to share it with people. They're excited to share their story. They're excited to share the beauty of their golf courses and their clubhouse. They really are proud of it, and that's wonderful. It's not this sort of place that's, you know, locked behind. They're excited to share it with the world when they host major championships. They're excited to share it with their guests, and we're happy last week that they were excited to share it with all of us.
Absolutely. That was very special. It was not stuffy at all, and I just really enjoyed, just feeling the passion and their appreciation for history and for what they have there. So how would you describe your design philosophy overall? I know I've read you've been described as one of the most influential minimalist golf course architects of the late 20th and early 21st century. And would you agree with that?
With our original designs, I would, because we're always, I think it's a correlation to the Tillinghast and the Rosses and the Mackenzies of the world. They when they were given a piece of ground, they always sought to maximize the natural advantages, whatever the great topography, the character, the views, the creeks, all the sort of natural features that are on a piece of property, they maximize those. And I think my partner Jim Wagner and I feel the same way. When we get a piece of ground, we want to try to maximize, which in an odd way, it's counterintuitive, is what minimalism is. It means a minimal intrusion of man-made touches. So if we can find all of these great natural advantages in the ground and utilize them to create strategy and interest in the golf course, then we have been minimally active in trying to manipulate the natural features. So I think when we're given a site, we love to do that, but we're also quite comfortable taking a site and turning it upside down if it doesn't have any natural features and creating something. And I think in a weird way, we're well positioned to do that because we spend so much time studying nature and studying great landforms and studying these great old courses and have been so fortunate to be entrusted with a number of them that I think they certainly have a great influence on what we do in our own designs. But our preference would always be to build new golf courses on fantastic sites.
What's next for you? I'm sure you're juggling a couple projects at the same time. I know you're very hands-on, Gil. So how many can you take on at the same time if you do more than one?
So, Ann, the key for us is how many are under construction. And we can really never manage more than three or four big projects under construction.
Right.
Because, like you said, I still love to get on a bulldozer. That's my favorite part of the job. And that's as long as my body allows me to keep doing it, I'm going to keep doing it. So, and I think Jim Wagner feels the same way. He's more proficient on an excavator than I am. So that's the fun part of our job is that, getting on the machinery and extending that design window we don't design the golf course isn't finished when the piece of paper or the plans leave the office. We have the ability to manipulate that and hopefully make it better with our presence on site and all these the great guys that work with us. So that design build philosophy has been something that's been a big part of our company ever since we founded it.
I know you designed an 18-hole layout in France, Les Bourdes in France. I hope I pronounced that right. I'm supposed to go over there soon. So, boy, you've been doing global work for a while now.
We have. I mean, we try to balance that as best we can. The opportunity at Les Bourdes was it's a beautiful piece of sandy ground, very heathland-like, and we had never built a golf course in continental Europe, and the ownership group was great, and Tracy and I, my wife, we got to spend 5 months living in France, being on site and I tell you what, it was a lot of fun. It was the food and the wine, everything was great. So those types of experiences we're excited to be able to have, and so it's, again, I think it's fairly simplistic for Jim and I. As long as we can make it fit in the schedule, if we think we can do something exceptional with an existing club or with a new property, and we're going to have fun doing it, then, we're in.
Well, congratulations on your work at Baltusrol. It was a treat to be able to experience it so soon after it really opened with the, with the redo. And continued success. We'll have to get you on again to talk about all your other projects.
I would love to do it. Thanks for having me on, Ann. It was great seeing you as well.
Thanks so much. Gil Hance. All right. Well, coming up, we're going to switch back to the Travelers Championship, the final round this afternoon. And coming up, my conversation with Austin Eckroat, who's playing in the Travelers Championship in this, his first PGA Tour event as a professional. Very exciting. But first, let me tell you, at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, the final round this afternoon. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. My guest is Austin Eckroat, who is playing in his first PGA Tour event as a professional, the Travelers Championship. Austin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Austin was my pro in the BMW Charity Pro-Am in Greenville, South Carolina a few weeks ago, a Corn Ferry tournament. You're probably still recovering from that, Austin.
Yeah.
But it was your very first professional event, and in your very first round, you carded two eagles on that day. And so what a great start then. And just a few weeks later, you know, you're playing in your first PGA Tour event. It's been a fun ride, and it's been fun seeing all this with you up close and personal.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun time. You know, I like to think that BMW Charity Pro-Am, and you play a part in that. It was kind of a nice runway into professional golf, you know, kind of a more relaxed feel. It wasn't so like straight into professional golf, you know, like how this week is, where you're playing with two professionals. You know, it's kind of like a little bit more laid back feel, and it was really, you know, I can't think of the last time I've made two eagles in a round, so that was very, very fun to do, and glad you got to witness that. But it's been really exciting, tiring, but you know, that's just the way it is, and I think I'm young enough where I can handle it.
Absolutely. You know, those two eagles and your very first Corn Ferry event as a pro, I mean, just being a part of that and watching you do that and giving a high five, you made the highlight reel for sure. And now tell me, when you got the call from Nathan Grubb, the tournament director at the Travelers, and they offered you a special exemption to play in the Travelers, what were your thoughts at that point?
You know, I was just really excited. I had just gotten – Ricky Fowler had just texted me a couple of days before telling me that I was into the Rocket Mortgage. So, you know, I was really just putting my schedule together, and it was just really, you know, an exciting moment to know that I'm going to play two PGA Tour events in a row, just kind of figuring out this lifestyle. And initially we thought, you know, this is actually kind of the perfect way to do it, go into two Corn Ferry Tour events, get used to professional golf, and then go – try to go play against the best in the world, you know. You know, I was just really, really happy to get the slot this week. Hoping it turns out for the best, but we'll see.
Well, I had the pleasure of watching you play on Friday, walking with your dad, your longtime coach, Steve Eckroat, and your fiance, Sally. Mm-hmm. And after shooting a plus two on Thursday, you came out of the gate on Friday with three straight birdies, and then you birdied 17. So you shot a bogey-free 4-under-66, which was really, really great. Talk a little bit about your round on Friday, and what do you think of TPC River Highlands?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't very comfortable at all on Thursday. Just kind of everything was just a little bit off. You know, I felt good. Like, I felt like, you know, it was just one thing was slightly off. So then I came out today with a lot of confidence. Had a good feeling I was going to play well. And then obviously birdieing the first three holes really, really helps. You know, it just kind of puts you in a good mindset. And, you know, you're just basically, I was already playing the stake-free golf. And that's how I played today. You know, I didn't really – you know, I let some opportunities go away, you know, three putting the par five and not getting up and down on 15. But, you know, I didn't really make any mistakes, which is just, you know, really important out there. And I love this golf course. It's really, really good. I mean, I think it's one of the, you know, one of my favorite courses I've played. Just the finishing stretch on the back nine is just really, really interesting. It's really fun to play. I love how it wraps around the water. And it's a really cool place.
And it's fun to walk. It's not easy to walk.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun to visit with your fiance, Sally, and to talk to your dad, Steve. And so what's been the biggest difference so far? I know this is only your first PJ Tour event as a pro, but what did you notice like right away from the Korn Ferry to this PJ Tour event as a professional?
You know, I think my fiance Sally will agree. It's the just how welcoming and how, you know, they have stuff for, you know, spouses, they have stuff for families. You know, it's just really this week it's just been, it's an event, you know what I mean? And they have all sorts of, you know, they had gifts for Sally, they had gifts for me, you know, my caddy got a jacket. It's just like everything is, you know, you feel very welcome here, you know, and that's just a fantastic event. You can tell that they're, you know, they take a lot of pride in this event. And, you know, the Korn Ferry tournaments are obviously awesome, and they're just a great, you know, it's awesome to have an opportunity to play, but they're just a completely different feel. You know, you really feel like this is an event, you know, rather than a tournament, you know what I mean?
Sure. Oh, they really do take care of the players. The players love the Travelers Championship because they're, you know, it's just a real, they're real people friendly, right? Not only for the players, but the spectators and the volunteers. And really during a normal week, there's just a whole week's worth of really cool stuff. It's a, you know, dialed back a little bit more this year, obviously, because of the pandemic. But hopefully it all gets back to normal next year. But the crowds, how was it having the crowds out there?
Yeah, I heard that it was, you know, they weren't at full capacity, but I mean, there were still quite a few people out there. You could hear roars whenever people were making putts from across the course, or, you know, there was kind of like an, you know, you'd be on hole 6, which is as far away from hole 15 as you can get, and you could still hear a roar every once in a while when people would make an eagle on 15. So it's just, it's really cool to get, you know, playing amateur golf. It's rare that you have fans. You know, same with the Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, there's fans, but it's not anything crazy. But then out here, it's just, it's really fun to play in front of people. You know, it's something that, you know, I haven't really got to experience that much growing up. But, you know, it's just exciting.
Well, let's talk about your background growing up. You grew up in Oklahoma. And when did you know that golf would be your sport, Austin?
You know, I always really liked golf. It was always my favorite of the sports. I was pretty good at some other sports too, so I kept playing them. But it was something that me and my dad did at such a young age, so it was always really enjoyable for me. And then I was, you know, pretty good at a young age. I was shooting under par every once in a while. You know, I was better than my peers. It was like, you know, I think I'm, you know, I'm pretty good. And then I just continued to get a little bit better, and I think it was my freshman year of high school is whenever I decided to quit playing everything else and really focus on golf. And, you know, it was just, I committed to Oklahoma State that year. You know, I'd say I really decided golf. I was probably pretty young because I always wanted to be a professional golfer, you know, and I don't know if it was just because it was such an enjoyment, you know, me and my dad did it every night whenever he'd come home from work or whatever. It was just, I always wanted to play professional golf. It was from a very young age. I'm not sure the age, though.
Right. And then you were a four-time All-American at Oklahoma State and were a big part of that 2018 NCAA title. Talk about some of your colleagues on that team. I mean, that was you were loaded with some pretty heavyweight talent there.
Oh, yeah. So in 2018, we had 11 guys on the team to start the year. We ended up having 12 in the fall or in the spring. But some names on that team would be, you know, obviously Victor Hovland, Matt Wolf, Chris Ventura, who's also on the PGA Tour, Zach Boshu, who he's obviously a great player. He's been traveling the world just trying to get, you know, it's hard to make it to the highest level. You know, you got all these little feeder tours, you know, into the PGA Tour, but, you know, it's hard. There's great golfers everywhere, so he's kind of stuck in some of those lower tours right now, but he'll find his way out there. And then we had Brendan Jelly, who's, I mean, instantly started playing really well as soon as he turned pro. He's won a bunch of Adams Tour events. Sam Stevens, the same thing. And then sophomore year, Hayden Wood took over Chris's spot in the top five. And then we have a whole new team now. And, you know, we had a first-team All-American. You know, this year I was probably our third-best player. Whenever you look at our scores, we had a transfer from Wake Forest who's first team All-American, and then Bo Jin, who was a freshman who finished second place at nationals, regionals, and conference. You know, he finished the season with three straight second places. So, wow. I mean, we've had an incredible team over the last 4 years. I was really, really blessed to go play golf for, you know, Oklahoma State and have, you know, just awesome competition every day, you know, for 4 years in a row.
Sure, and I read where you lived with Victor Hovland and Matthew Wolf for a little bit.
Yeah, Matt was my roommate when I got to school. He was, you know, he's one of my best friends, and so we lived together for 2 years. Then he moved over to Florida. Victor stayed in Stillwater. Victor bought a house, and I ended up moving with him, and I lived with him for 2 years. So not bad roommates, you know. I think someone said at one time that there's not many people in the world, because this is whenever Matt was top 15. I'm not sure where he is now, but that they're, two of their best friends are top 15 in the world in the official world golf ranking. So that was pretty funny.
Unbelievable. I can't imagine what your conversations were like with Victor Hovland when he came. You know, he's had such a great 2020. Mm-hmm. And did you learn anything from him? What did you guys talk about?
Well, I was mostly home alone. He traveled a lot.
I bet.
You know, he's kind of a funny guy. Just kind of whenever he gets home, he puts his earphones in and plays poker. You know, I think and that's honestly something I learned from him is, you know, just trying to keep your life as simple as possible. You know, it's already stressful enough out traveling, playing professional golf. And, you know, without him even telling me, you know, I think I learned, you know, how important it is to have a simple life outside of golf, you know.
Sure. And Matthew Wolf shared during the U.S. Open week that he struggled to find happiness on and off the course. And he actually took some time away from the game earlier this season to try to figure it out. So, I mean, can you relate to the pressure and the expectations that he feels?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's an incredible player. He was probably arguably one of the best college players of all time, you know, in his 2 year run. It's just, you know, you can see it happen to people, you know, and I think some personalities handle it better than others and some don't. But, you know, I could see it from, you know, I've been friends with him for a long time. You know, you could see he was unhappy and, you know, he's looking much better now. And I think he's really enjoying the game again. You know, it's just sometimes it's hard, you know, you get down on yourself and like he was and, you know, it's hard to get out of that.
Sure. And, you know, it's helpful. I mean, your dad travels with you and he's your coach. And, mm-hmm. and now Sally, your fiance, travels with you. And Stone, your caddy, is, you know, a friend from high school. So you've kind of surrounded yourself with these people, obviously your family and then mm-hmm. Stone being a friend of yours. I mean, I think that plays a key part in, you know, and keeping you company on the road and just, you know, having somebody who've known for a long time as your caddy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've always been told that's a pretty lonely life, you know, whenever you're traveling, playing professional golf, you know, but I've been fortunate to where my fiance Sally's been traveling with me. You know, I have one of my all-time best friends, you know, I've been best friends with him since I was in seventh grade, you know, walking every hole with me. And, you know, there's just, you know, conversation that you can't have with people you don't know that well. I mean, it's just very lucky to have him. And then my dad, you know, always coming to these tournaments, you know, as a swing coach and as just, you know, a father figure. It's nice to have everybody around and, you know, make this life a little less lonely. Hotel rooms get lonely if you're by yourself, that's for sure.
That's true. And you know, you have people to hang out with, which I think is a huge part of being happy and staying happy out there and dealing with, you know, the lows and the highs, because you're going to have them no matter how good you are. So what have you been working on? What do you think has, as far as your game goes, what have you had to work on the most as you transitioned from a college player to a professional?
I always knew I hit it pretty good. You know, coaches, the Oklahoma State coaches and Matt and Victor both told me, you know, that the ball striking is an area that, you know, I would be considered pretty good on the PGA Tour. I've always hit the ball well. Anything involving short game, you know, whether it's wedges or chipping or putting, that's where, you know, I could have improved over, you know, when the transition from college to professional, that's the area where I needed to improve for sure. So I've really worked hard on it, though. I mean, putting the last 2 weeks. I think I was second in the field for putting in South Carolina, and I was up there in Wichita. And that's basically been unheard of whenever you talk about my golf game. So the putter, you know, has really turned around. I still need to improve on my chipping, but, you know, I am. And I think that's something that's once I get those two dialed in, I should be pretty good.
Absolutely. I've been so impressed with your putting, and it's good to hear that you've improved it. And I just, you were, it was always going in when we played together in that BMW Charity Pro-Am. And, you know, it really comes down to making those putts, as you know.
It does. Yeah, it really, really does. You know, you can hit it. It's funny, you know, we always talk about, like, you can out ball strike someone to death and they can still beat you. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just the difference between making putts. That's the difference between the guys on the Korn Ferry Tour, the guys on the PGA Tour. I mean, it's just who's making the putts and who's not. It's
Have you had a chance to meet Phil Mickelson or Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, any of these guys who are big time winners?
I've met Tiger Woods. I met him at the 2016 Sage Valley Invitational as a junior. That was really, really, really cool. I got to play a practice round with DJ and Ricky Fowler at the U.S. Open in 2019. I played a practice round with Rory McIlroy as well. I played with Jordan Spieth in 2015. So I've had a pretty good run of, you know, guys I've gotten to play with. It's, you know, it's weird, you know, guys look different on TV than they do in person. It's just it's just interesting. It's really cool to play with guys that you've looked up to for a really long time, you know, and compare yourself to them, you know, see areas where they're better than you, areas where you feel like you're just as good as them. It's just interesting.
Did Tiger have any words of advice for you?
No, he it was actually kind of cool, though. He came after the first round of the tournament, and I shot 65. I shot 7 under and had a 4-shot lead, and he was on the tee the next round, and you know, he just told me to go shoot 4 or 3 more rounds in the 60s, and I ended up not doing that, but I still won the tournament, so that was kind of cool.
Well, at least he got to see you shoot that low number. That's awesome,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, what's next on your schedule, Austin, after this Travelers Championship?
I have the Rocket Mortgage on the following week, and then we're kind of just reevaluating from there. I've played 2 Korn Ferry Tour events, and now it'll be 2 PGA Tour events after the Rocket Mortgage, and to see where I have the best chance of making it to the Korn Ferry Tour finals. You know, so whether it's top 200 in the FedEx Cup points on the PGA Tour, or top 75 on the Korn Ferry Tour points list. So, you know, just seeing where I have a better chance, and then we'll try to get into some more, either more PGA Tour events or play the Korn Ferry Tour schedule. I'm not sure yet, but I'll know after the Rocket Mortgage.
Well, you have a great personality for the game. You have everything going for you. You have the Hollywood looks. Your fiance Sally is amazing. I just have so enjoyed getting to know her. You have and your dad is so nice. You have such a bright future. I know you're getting married next October. You just bought a house. I mean, you just signed a deal with Ping. I mean, your future is so bright. And you played on the Walker Cup team. We didn't even talk about that. But listen, I wish you all the success in the world, and so glad I could be a very small part of your 2 tournaments, for your 2 first as a professional, your first tournament on the Korn Ferry Tour and your first pro tournament on the Travelers Championship.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah, every time you've watched, I think I've shot pretty far under par, so maybe you should come more often.
I will. I'll be your good luck charm. Austin Eckroat, continued success, and we'll get you on again in the future.
All right, thank you.
All righty. Well, my thanks to Austin Eckroat, to Gil Hans, to the lovely folks at Baltusrol and Mountain Ridge, to Ed Arzuman in the studio, to Paul Rosenberg in production during the week. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori was brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship. The final round is this afternoon. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Kramer, Hickok, and Bubba Watson tied for the lead at 10 under with 36 players within 5 shots of the lead. Anything can happen. Should be another great finish. Catch it on CBS from 3 to 6. Be sure to stay tuned. Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge is up next. I look forward to talking with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.